everyone, and welcome to the 305. We are now on episode 6. We are watching Swing Time, which is a 1936 musical with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. I am your host, Jonathan Irons, and today my special guest is Shelley Janchevsky, from Chicago, Illinois, who is has a professional dance background. And Shelley, I wonder if you could give us a little info about your history with dance.
Yeah, great. Hey, my name is Shelley. I currently live in Chicago, and I am a bar instructor. So I'm not currently dancing, but still doing bar just to, keep the artistic side of me alive.
And but what's bar?
Bar fitness. So it's a fitness program where we use a ballet bar, we use small weights, we use resistance, and just it's a great overall strength workout. So I started dancing when I was 2 and danced
professionally, right?
Well, yeah, 2, definitely, like, very professional at 2. But yeah, I started dancing at 2, took dance lessons my whole life. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts from the University of Buffalo, and just an avid dance lover. So
nice. What kind of styles do you do? Or is it just everything?
Ballet is probably my strongest background, but jazz, contemporary, tap.
Wow.
A little bit of social dance as well. So, like, waltz, the ballroom dance kind of things that you see on Dancing with the Stars a little bit.
Have you been on Dancing with the Stars yet?
No, unfortunately, no. I auditioned for So You Think You Can Dance, and I got a couple audition clips, but that's about it.
That's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
This movie, Swing Time, have you ever seen this before?
No, I haven't. I'm actually really excited. I've seen a million dance musicals, but not this one, so.
Okay. Have you seen any other Astaire and Rogers movies?
I'm trying to rack my brain here. I've seen Holiday Inn, but I don't think Ginger Rogers is in that one.
I don't think so. Or at least not from the reading that I did.
Yeah, and then also Easter Parade, which I also don't think she's in. So I don't think that I have seen a Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers musical. So
that's okay, because I haven't either. I've only seen just like lots of clips, and I know they're famous.
Awesome. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we are going to take our break here to watch the movie. Hopefully all of you can track down a way to watch this. I'll put a link in the description in case I find it online. Otherwise, I know Criterion has a Blu-ray available. And we will be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to see that they're giving this to a man who is not only most deserving, but has conducted himself throughout his years in our business in a manner that we can all be proud of him. Coop and I have been friends hunting and fishing for more years than I like to remember. He's one of the nicest fellows I know. I don't know anybody any nicer. And our kinship goes further than that friendship, because we both fell off of horses into pictures together. Now that I am through being such a good sport, spouted all this good sportsmanship, I'm going to go back and find my business manager, an agent, producer, and find out why I didn't get High Noon instead of Cooper. Of course, I can't fire any of these very expensive fellas, but I can at least run my 1930 Chevrolet into one of their big black new Cadillacs.
Tune in next episode for 1952's High Noon, a politically controversial and highly influential Western starring Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly. Okay, so 1936, $25,000. Now, $460,000.
Damn.
He wanted to pay that man to marry his daughter.
An expensive lady.
Jeez. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We have just finished viewing Swing Time, a musical from the 1930s with the duo of Astaire and Rogers. It is the first musical in the Criterion Collection. And it is by RKO Studios, who has done fully half of the movies so far. They were so popular in the 30s. I am just going to start out by asking Shelley, what did you think of it first as a movie?
As a movie, it's the plot's a little light.
Yeah. You're not the first person to say that.
Yeah. So, you know, but it was a good time.
Yeah.
I giggled and clapped and, you know, I'm feeling good after watching it, but, yeah, I don't really feel like my life has been changed by watching this movie.
Yeah.
But same. I'm certainly happier than I was, you know, an hour and 45 minutes ago. So.
Okay, that's something. Yeah. Well, how would you compare it to more recent musicals that you've seen? I don't know, have you seen many musicals?
I mean, honestly, it's hard right now because with an almost two-year-old, all I'm watching is, like, Frozen on repeat. So
it's like an animated musical. They just don't dance. Musical. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that... a lot of musicals now, they, you know, the backstory of the plot is almost more important than the dancing and the singing sometimes, where in this particular movie, it seemed like this movie was written just so they could dance and sing. Like, that's really the whole point of it, so.
And surprising, it seemed like they didn't even dance that much. For that being the point of it, like,
yeah, I mean, we watched what, like, half hour of movie before they did any dancing. I mean, aside from the quick little snippet at the beginning, the show that was going on, but there wasn't, you know, most of these musicals, especially from the 30s or, you know, 40s, Holiday Inn, White Christmas, like all those kind of movies, like, always start with some huge opening number,
right? Yeah, the spectacle of it,
yeah,
and this is like a slow burn.
Right. Yeah, so I'm like, oh, there's going to be like a big old plot. And then they're like, no, not really.
Yeah, you don't even get that in exchange.
Yeah.
Well, and even after it took him a while to get started, I counted 4 dancing numbers.
Yeah.
Over the course of an hour and 40 minutes or so.
Right.
Which I was pretty surprised by. Because, like, the hype that I had read about this movie and their other movies, because this apparently the two of them, Rogers and Astaire, started working together only 3 years before, and they made 2 movies a year for every year. So this was their 6th movie together already, and it was listed as like the peak of their creative collaboration and the point at which, like, after this, none of their movies did as well anymore. They had sort of like reached their Apex. Crest. Yeah. And like it got, there was a song called The Way You Look Tonight that wasn't even a dancing number. It was just him singing on the piano.
Right.
That won the Academy Award for Best Original Song.
Oh.
And then the Bojangles number got a nomination for Best Dance Direction. And I guess just, like, I've heard so much about Rogers and Astaire and known them. It's like they are the quintessential, like, dancing couple. But this movie, at least on its own, didn't really seem to hold that up.
I totally agree. Like, you would expect for, especially a movie where they're saying that this is like their best one, that there would be a lot more dancing. I mean, I know I already said White Christmas, but like, that's probably one of my favorite musical movies.
Yeah.
And there's like 15 dance numbers in White Christmas. And like, some of them are just like straight dancing, have nothing to do with the plot. They're just like, oh, and here's a dance number that they're going to rehearse.
You're talking about that weird abstract one, right?
What? Oh, yeah.
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 The show within the show that has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then there's like another like tap number too, where they're just like, oh, let's rehearse that one tap number.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like,
just to throw it in.
Yeah. That's like amazing dancing. Whereas here I'm like, I could have dealt with like, let's rehearse this thing and just do some more dancing.
Well, what, so as far as the dancing goes, how, I guess, what did you think of it as a whole? Like, how was the technical virtuosity? Oh,
yeah, the dancing is incredible, especially, you know, for the time. Like, even now, it would stand, like, the tap sounds are so clean, and they're mixing ballroom dance, like, they're doing a waltz, and then also tapping, like, you don't do that. That's, like, that's really cool. And just, yeah, just, like, effortless. And I think now, like, especially in the world that we're in, like, the world of TikTok or whatever, you know, like, everybody is a dancer. You know, everything is, like, more about, like, your face, your attitude, rather than, like, your technical ability. And in this, like, video, you know, or movie, they have both. Like, they're... dancing beautifully and also performing, but it's not like, oh, their face is just taking over. Plus, like, when you look at just the dancing as a whole, they're like never, if you watch like more musicals or you know, shows now that have dance and singing in them, they're like zooming in on people's faces all the time, where this is like you're seeing everything, and they barely cut also, which means that they have to be like dancing perfectly fair sequence. So
it's cool that you noticed that, because that was something that I discovered, that Fred Astaire in particular, that was like his major innovation in musicals, was that before him, the most popular musicals were like Busby Berkeley, the choreographer, and those movies, like I know Gold Diggers of 1933 was a big one that also had Ginger Rogers, and they were... like the camera work was a big part of it. There was lots of cuts and crazy, like the camera would dolly through the legs and do weird music, like water numbers and stuff like that. And then Fred Astaire was like, no, 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 I want the whole thing done in one take. The camera just needs to show us, 'cause we're the important part. And that that lasted for decades as like the style, because he made it popular, which I thought was pretty cool.
I love that. Like when I watch dance shows now, like you know, if you watch So You Think You Can Dance or America's Got Talent, like any time that they have dancers on, like you know, my husband can tell you I'm always screaming at the TV like, show them dancing, because they just like zoom in on their head, or like they'll show them from like behind or the side or something. It's like, it's not supposed to you're not supposed to see it like that. Now, like, people are going to be like, oh, I hated that.
Yeah.
It's because they just filmed it in a stupid way.
Do you think do you think they're doing the camera like that in order to hide worse dancing?
No, I think that, like, people don't have attention spans anymore. So they're like, we have to cut 8,000 times, like, flash lights in your face while these people are dancing, because, like, you're going to watch them dance.
Just to make it exciting, really stand out.
Exactly.
Well, it's good. This is part of why I wanted you on as a person with experience, is that to me, watching these numbers, it's like, it's interesting, but I don't have a sense of really like how it compares to modern dance. So I'm glad that they are at least like very technically skilled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, like in the world of dance now, like, you do have to basically be, like, a gymnast, contortionist, acrobat, like, on top of being a dancer. So, as far as, like, that goes, no, they're not. They're not as, I guess, not as talented as you could say that people that are currently dancing are. But, like, they don't need all the flash. They don't need all the...
It's almost like a different style of dancing, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's just so effortless. Like, they look like they could just, like, finish up the dance and be like, okay, like, you want to go grab two coffees now? Like, we're totally fine, not sweaty, and, like, not out of breath or anything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's, what was it? I had a note here. Oh, so the number, Swing Time, like the title number.
Yeah.
You had mentioned it, and I also made a note of it, that they, there is a quote in the movie where I think Astaire says specifically, we're going to do a waltz in Swing Time, which I thought was interesting. And then I only have, like, you know, memories of music from high school band, but I was trying to keep track of the time.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, that is, it seems like it switches back and forth between 3/4 time for the waltz and then, like, something totally different for the swing part. And it's like going back and forth between these changing time signatures. And I wondered if that, having that happen in a song is particularly difficult in dance, like being able to switch between different signatures.
Yeah, totally. Plus, not only are the time signatures changing, but they're also, when they're in the, like, swing, you know, tap part of it, they're, like, dancing syncopated as well. So the music is in, like, a different signature. Plus, they're not dancing, like, on the, like, downbeat. They're So, like, you're just juggling so much.
It is pretty cool.
I mean, also, as a dancer, like, I guess, yes, it's difficult to do, but, like, you practice it so much until it's just all muscle memory. And it just, like, happens. But, yeah, I mean, definitely so much rehearsal. And, I've read and know that Fred Astaire was, like, a workhorse, and nobody like, worked with him because he, like, rehearsed like an insane person. So...
That's why
you can skip back and forth from a waltz into a syncopated tap step for 8 counts or whatever.
There is a quote from Astaire that late in his life, I can't remember the year, he was doing an interview and he was asked by the interviewer, like, who is your favorite dance partner? And at first he didn't want to say. And then a little bit later, he was like, okay, no, you know what I should say? It was absolutely Ginger Rogers. And he had a longer quote, but part of the reason that he said Ginger Rogers is that all of his other partners at some point would break down in tears. And that Rogers never cried. It's like, well, geez, that's an interesting reason to pick her as your favorite partner. She could take your insane rehearsal schedule.
Exactly. She's not a light little feather.
I learned that Astaire apparently, well, let's see, getting into the backgrounds a little bit, I know that Astaire and Rogers actually both grew up in vaudeville as dancers. Astaire apparently had, he was a duo with his sister Adele as a dancing show, and then Rogers was on her own as a teenager. They both wound up on Broadway separately, and then they both got into movies, although apparently Rogers had a little easier time of it. She got right into Paramount Pictures and started doing movies. And then there was a quote about Astaire that was so funny. He, like, completely biffed his first audition for the movie studios. And here we go. According to Hollywood folklore, a screen test report on Astaire for RKO, now lost along with the test, is reported to have read, "Can't sing, can't act, balding, can dance a little."
Funny.
Yeah, and it says Astaire later clarified, insisting that the report had read, "Can't act, slightly bald, also dances."
I mean, I can agree. His singing is just not great.
Yeah, it was surprising that they chose to, like, showcase that multiple times over the course of the movie.
Right.
Like, I know a lot of other musicals.
The way you look tonight, I was like, this is, like, not great.
And that was the one that won the Academy Award.
I know.
Yeah.
It was my wedding song. I mean, not that version, but
Which version?
Frank Sinatra.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go and listen to that. I'll put a link in the description for the podcast.
Yeah.
So people can compare. But I think, so I was going to say that.
Wait, no, The Way You Look Tonight was not my wedding song.
Oh.
You Make Me Feel So Young was my wedding song. Never mind.
Similar sentiment. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was my prom song, The Way You Look Tonight. Yep.
Okay. Interesting choice. Yeah. Mine, we didn't really have prom songs that I remember, but surely it would have been something like Baby Got Back.
Yeah, our runner-up was the thong song, but the school was like, no.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Fred Astaire, I understand that he actually met with, he worked on a project with a guy named Hermes Pan. Have you heard of this
guy?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They choreographed, like, a lot together.
Yeah. He did, let's see, half. 17 out of a series 31 films were the two of them together. And apparently, let's see. So there's another quote here. Given Astaire's obsessive rehearsal habits, it was no mean task to get Astaire and Rogers, like, up to snuff. It says, Pan also performed the essential function of teaching and rehearsing Ginger Rogers, whose many other commitments during the filming of the Astaire Rogers musicals often conflicted with the rehearsal schedule. And in addition, Pan actually recorded Ginger's taps in post-production on all of their movies after 1935.
Huh.
Yeah.
Dang.
Which makes me, it'd be interesting if any of Ginger's actual recordings still survived, to be able to compare, like, what it was actually like on set versus Pan's overdub later.
Totally. And, you know, it's kind of funny that you said that, because I've always sort of wondered when I watch these, like, old musicals, and because the ladies are tapping, but they're wearing, like, high heels.
Yeah.
Like high-heeled taps typically have, like, an ankle strap. None of these girls' tap shoes have ankle straps. I know from dancing in a high-heeled tap shoe that, like, you know, the heel sound, because it's such a smaller plate on your tiny heel versus, like, when you're wearing a, you know, flat, like, clog type of shoe, it's just, like, inaudible, basically. So I've always wondered, like, what they were doing, if they're, like, tapping in a different shoe to record it. So that's interesting. So,
well, and I'd almost wonder if, because, like, it's especially back then, it was almost, like, required to redub all of the dialogue in the studio after the shoot. So I wonder if Astaire was dubbing over his own tapping as well, just because they didn't have a microphone capable of getting close enough to the feet.
Right.
Especially since they were shooting everything in wide, like we talked about, you know, seeing the whole thing. I don't know if this is an easy question or not, but, like, I wonder how difficult it is to so closely mimic, like, your own dancing in a video like that.
Not I wouldn't say that hard.
Not terribly. Okay.
Huh. Yeah. Especially with tap, because, like, you can do an entire tap number on, like, a, you know, piece of plywood. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, because the sounds are coming from small movements of your feet. The traveling, like, that you're doing across the floor is just, like, for show. But you can do the same steps without really moving anywhere, so.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't know how much you know about the, I guess, history of dance and some of these specific styles, but, like, do you know if Astaire had come up with any particular innovations or, like, advancements within tap dancing or some of these things? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know much about the dance compared to the time in the 30s. It's so long ago.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, and, like, to be totally honest with you, tap was always my least favorite of the dance styles that I had to do. So
okay.
So when it got any time, it was like, oh, let's learn the stuff about tap. I was like, in this ear, push it out.
Yeah. Is it at least much different now, or like when you were learning it, compared to what you saw in the movie?
No, definitely not. I mean, like, okay. Tap is pretty classic. Like, yeah. If you, you know, find a tap textbook, like, it's going to have the same sort of, like, riffs and steps that are, like, from the 20s, or they have, like, funny names that come from, like, the vaudeville era. So you're still doing the same stuff. It's just that now people have taken tap and they combine it, like, with hip-hop, or like tap on, like, point shoes, and so, like, it's getting, you know, people just kind of innovate, but the, like, basis of tap has, you know, been, I would say it's been the same.
Gotcha. As far as the movie goes, since we said this before we started recording, plot-wise, I'll recap real quick for the listeners. We got Lucky and Penny are the main characters. Lucky is a dancer who is trying to marry the girl that he's supposedly in love with, Margaret, and he has to come up with a $25,000 dowry in order to do so. So he is apparently very much in love with this girl. And he's going to come up with this money through a combination of his dancing skills and his gambling skills. He hitches a train to New York City, I assume?
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah.
I guess. If you just say New York, you have to assume.
Yeah. And then proceeds to try and raise this money. He meets Penny in the process. She's a teacher at a local dance studio. And then, I guess just kind of in a meet-cute sort of way, he ends up falling for her because she can also dance. And then the whole movie is about them, the usual will they, won't they sort of thing. I thought it was, I think we both laughed at the end when, like, Margaret comes in and you know it's going to be the big, like, they've got to break up so that the main characters can get together. And she just immediately is like, I'm sorry, but I don't love you anymore.
Right.
And then they just start laughing about how ridiculous that is, that they've fallen out of love with each other and they've been keeping up pretenses. And then we have the really bizarre ending that involves, so let's see. Yeah, Margaret is supposed to marry Ricardo, who is the owner of a club that Lucky, Fred Astaire, now owns. And so they're competing, and then Lucky and his pal stumble in on Ricardo on the wedding day, and they discover that his pants don't have cuffs on them. And I know there was a joke earlier in the movie about pants without cuffs and how silly that was, but somehow him not having cuffs means that the wedding is off.
Right.
And did you get that any more than I did?
I mean, the funniest thing that I thought of happened in this whole movie was how concerned about fashion all the men were.
Yes, I mean, very much so.
At the beginning of the movie, Lucky almost misses his wedding because all of his coworkers, like, prank him that he has to have cuffs on his pants because they don't want him to, like, leave and ruin their show. And he's very concerned about the cuffs. And then there's the whole, like, tux situation where he has to have the specific tux in the middle of the movie for their audition,
right, which he tries to win off of a drunk gambler,
right? And then they end up just kind of playing strip poker with each other instead, which, why would the gambler guy be like, yeah, I want your clothes,
because he is so drunk. Anything makes sense at that point.
But again, more men just, like, really talking a lot about fashion.
Yeah.
And maybe that's sexist of me to say.
But it is unusual. Yeah.
and then they decide that this cuffs prank is so good to stop weddings. Like, why don't we try it here at the end? And yeah, Ricardo's just like, oh, yes, this magazine says I need cuffs. I definitely need to get some cuffs. And then he's pantsless because they steal his pants. And
yeah. Well, no, that wasn't... They didn't... No, they did steal his pants. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
But he after stealing his pants, which I don't know, that's weird on its own, but they steal his pants and then he trades pants with his butler.
Right.
And then comes out in super baggy pants. Him. Yes.
Yeah.
And then essentially just has to admit, like, well, guys, you got me. The wedding's off.
Yeah.
I guess. Pretty much. Yeah, I guess you get to marry now.
Yeah. Like, oh, everyone's laughing at me. I guess we're not having a wedding, no.
I liked also that I noticed at the beginning of that sequence when Astaire and his pal come into Ricardo's like dressing room. They look at the magazines on the table, and they see the cover of Esquire, but just like movies today where they change the names of all of the products, like Sprite becomes Sprit or whatever, the cover is actually, it's just Squire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they've like modified it so they won't get in trouble, even in 1936.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, so the last thing I think that I would like to get your opinion on would be the out of the four musical numbers, the one that is like most well regarded and most well remembered out of the movie is Bojangles on Harlem is the name of the song. And if anybody didn't watch the movie, this was apparently the only time in his career that Fred Astaire did blackface. And it really doesn't excuse it in any way, but apparently he was he was honoring Bill Robinson, who was known as Bojangles, who was a famous, actually black tap dancer. And then Astaire himself was also trained by John W. Bubbles, who was another famous black dancer. And so he was trying to honor these other black dancers, but in a way that like is really gross now, especially. So I'm curious if you think that the like how the technical aspects of that number match up against like how we kind of have to view it now as like a cultural artifact.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's tough because we all know blackface is, like, just pretty much one of the worst things that you could do. But he is trying to, like, emulate this amazing tap dancer. But at the same time, it's like, you are an amazing tap dancer. Why do you need to copy this tap dancer by putting on blackface?
Yeah.
It's not like a mockery of him. It's the dance number is like, you know, very technical, very much like, you know, at the end of it, he's dancing in front of those three shadows of himself. And like the shadows get tired and he can keep on going. So it's like, you know, to me, it's like a, you know, oh my God, this guy never stops.
Yeah.
Like, which is great, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's so hard. So hard to... I mean, I enjoyed the number. And
yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to.
Yeah. Well, there's...
I would enjoy it more if his face was just his normal face.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And especially if they hadn't done the entire next scene with him still in makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then they just keep it on, like, for a really long time.
Yeah, well, like, romantic plot stuff is happening.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you there. I mean, especially with, like, older material, I've come up against this a lot where, like, you... So, like, Birth of a Nation. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
That was a much older movie. It was from, like... 1905, I think. And it's very famous in film history because the director came up with so many innovations in editing and camera work and acting and plot line, all of these things. And so it's absolutely worth studying for these technical aspects. But also, the movie was based on this horribly racist book about the Civil War and about, like, why it happened. And the plot is about the beginning of the Ku Klux Klan, and it's totally on the Klan side.
Oh.
Which is, like, there's just no excuse for it. It's horrible in that regard.
Yeah.
But they're, like, unfortunately, there's so many cases of artists who, it's like, yep, they were really awful for doing these things, and also they were really talented.
Right.
And of course, it still happens now with, we've got, it's always men, of course, but like Bill Cosby and Roman Polanski and Woody Allen and all of these people where it's like, well, yeah. It would be nice if I could enjoy these things without also having to watch them do blackface. But
yeah,
unfortunately. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the blackface that he does is, you know, less cartoony than other blackface.
At least.
He's from the time. Like, he doesn't have the big extra space around his lips like they typically did. But they do open with that, like, cartoony mouth over the
tap. That prop, right? Yeah.
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 So, I don't know. It's just...
Well, how do you think it compares to the special feature that we watched, which was a I forget the name of the movie, but it was an actual Bill Robinson musical number from the year before.
Right. I mean, it was definitely in Swing Time, this production number was a lot, you know, more showy and flashy than the one from the extra features, the one with Bill Robinson in it, but I mean, as far as like the taps go in it, I was more impressed with the Bill Robinson like tap. It was like cleaner, more subtle, you know, like he wasn't like flying all around the stage, you know, at the very end when he was just like tapping. It was just like he didn't move from that little spot, and it's just like we were still watching him. He wasn't like doing anything. So yeah, I mean, I would say I enjoyed the original more than the interpretation from Astaire.
I agree with you, actually. I found the original, it just seemed to have, I don't know, more character going on.
Yeah, it's like more heart. Like there were
heart would be a good way to put it.
Yeah, telling a real story and not just like, oh, okay, we're gonna like tap around really fast. There's a lot of, like, why were there 800 backup dancers? I don't know.
On a technical level, it was super cool that he managed to do that dancing partner thing with all 800 of them.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive. But I lost my train of thought. But anyway, it's totally worth seeing, I would say.
Oh, definitely. For sure.
So the way that I always wrap these up is have you heard of the Criterion Collection of movies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Back when Hollywood Video was a thing, they had like a Criterion Collection shelf, and my husband and I would like always try to pick one of those ones.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
No, I mean, I'm actually like a horror movie fan. That was my like absolute favorite, so... Yeah. I mean, I watch movies constantly.
Gotcha.
They turn into one.
They have a few of those in the... I don't know if they have much on like DVD and Blu-ray, but I know that Halloween and Carrie are both in like the original collection. Because it started on Laserdisc. And the point of this podcast is I'm trying to collect the entire Criterion set on Laserdisc.
Oh.
Of which there are 305 titles.
I was wondering if you were like just had the Laserdisc for this particular movie or something. I'm like, whoa, that's commitment.
No, it's actually all of them. just because, you know, it, I think it's interesting and fun and unusual, but
totally, it's like getting a record player or 8-track or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, a lot of these discs, part of what's interesting to me is that they have special features that are no longer available. So, like, they have director's commentaries and behind-the-scenes stuff that they just didn't bother to put on DVD. But anyway, Criterion, they have this mission statement of they want to release important contemporary and classic films on home video. And that's literally, it's, that's all they say, is it's just important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to ask my guests, like, based on our discussion and what you watched, do you think that a movie like Swing Time belongs in that sort of collection?
No.
Uh-huh.
Okay. No, I don't. I mean, yeah. The whole time I was watching this, I just was like, I think that I'm going to go watch White Christmas.
Yeah. I thought of An American in Paris with Danny Kaye. A lot of great dancing in that one.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, I just was like, I was enjoying it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was thinking of other films from the era with dancing that I prefer.
Well, do you think Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers should still be considered important within, like, the history of their practice?
Oh yeah, 100%. I wish I had seen more Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies to, like, compare, like, say, oh, I think that this one was better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to say that this was their best film together, it's like there wasn't that much dancing.
Yeah.
The plot was just like whatever. Like, things, like, oh, this has to happen, so this thing happened, so we're just going to say it happened.
Yeah.
And we don't love each other anymore, and your pants are too big. We can't get married.
Like, there it is. You summed it up. You don't need to watch the movie now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is. So, yeah, like, just, I guess I just need to go watch some more Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies to, like, solidify that they are the dancing duo.
That everyone says they are. Yeah.
Says that they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I'm definitely curious to see some more of their work. Because it seems like almost no matter what, one of their movies has to be, like, part of what you would say is an important collection of films. But if this is the best one,
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, I was laughing so much at things in this movie because I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like when you watch a bad horror movie and you, like, are like, I loved it because I laughed the whole time. Like, that's
yeah, there you go.
Kind of what I felt like watching it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sitting through this with me and giving me your expert opinion. I do appreciate it, Shelley. And I hope you have a great evening. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. We will be back next episode with the first Western in the collection, which is High Noon.